Before we turn to CNN's fifth question, which is also written at the at a grammar school level, we have Glenn, who's a good friend of the program, having called in from Philadelphia. Hello, Glenn. Welcome.
Hello, Yada. It's the ISIS, the use of the word ISIS,
right.
and even ISI. I mean, I gotta always wonder when I see, frequent use of that. It's like of ISIS. It's like somebody could be laughing up their sleeve about that one. She also happens to be the female pagan deity, the wife of the Egyptian Osiris. Yahweh, calls his people not only out of Babylon, but out of Egypt as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's
Isis
is the mother of God, the queen of heaven. She is the prototype for the Catholic Mary.
She also goes looking for all the pieces of Osiris to put them back together, and finds the particular one missing, which we have huge pillars representing all that too. Isn't that quite crazy?
Yeah. Well, right. Osiris plays the role of Nimrod or Tammuz, which is the son of the sun who gets killed and mutilated, and that's what Lent is all about. And then, of course, each year in the case of Isis in Egypt. In the case of Semiramis in the Babylonian religion, the sun impregnates Mother Earth, and we have the Mother of God, the Queen of Heaven, who is impregnated on Easter Sunday, and so on the winter solstice gives birth to the Son of the Sun. And it's what you have in this name, and you're right, is a presentation of the basis of Christianity, because it's based on these same myths.
Right.
Yeah, funny.
Yeah, this stuff permeates our culture when it rises. Like Horus is the sun at sunrise, which is where we get hours.
Right.
Horus.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
On or Osiris is the sun at noon, which is why we turn the light on.
Right.
And Set is the sun at sunset, which is why we have a sunset, who's also the same. Yeah.
And of course, it's Amun-Ra is the name of the Egyptian god, and that's why when Christians pray in God's name, we pray Amen, praying in the name of the Egyptian sun god. It goes on and on. And of course, in America, our shrines, our political shrines, are based largely upon Egyptian religious shrines.
Yeah, and certainly the pillars. I can't think of the name of the escaping me, the Washington Monument and such.
The obelisk. Yeah.
Things too. Yeah.
Right.
But
by the way, it's the same thing with the Vatican. The center of the Vatican is an Egyptian obelisk, which was dedicated to an Egyptian god.
Yeah, it was brought there. It was brought there. That
of
was
course.
Imported.
Crazy.
By the way, it's caliphate.
Yeah, I know. I'm never going to win an award for diction. I appreciate the correction. One of the reasons that I'm going to chuckle at it along with you here is that one of the things that is difficult about radio is that you become vulnerable, and the easiest way to become vulnerable is to mispronounce something. And I find that the more vulnerable I am. Now, I'm not telling you that I mispronounced the word on purpose, but when you become vulnerable, one thing you can't get is an ego. And I think the thing that is so destructive to anyone trying to tell the truth is they get in the way of the message and they develop an ego. You were recognizing one of my primary vulnerabilities, maybe it is kind of a humbling. It's a humbling. It's a humbling mechanism. No, I know you're not. You are. In fact, you've made it very clear that your correction of my diction on words like this is designed to preserve credibility as opposed to erode it. So no, I'm appreciative.
Yep. And I said the hosts, I understand, because they're trying to do a bazillion things. But what I don't understand is the commercials and the people who write the ad copy.
In
offices, then they have access to the thesauruses and dictionaries and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, for God's sake, who wrote the ad copy?
If you want to get me to talk about the ads that play on this show, that's a discussion we can have for another day. I had we're very close to running a song parody on them. The Friday program director for Shattering Mist was a songwriter, and we would, in the commercial breaks, we would make fun of the commercials that play on this program, and so and all of GCN's programs. And he actually was creating a song to write as a parody of those commercials. So, but we will not go there because we have more important things to discuss. But thank you, Glenn, for the call.
I'll let you go. Thanks. Right. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you, Glenn. The fifth question from the Brain Trust at CNN, written at the level of communications that you would expect and see Dick and Jane run after Spot. Actually, I think you see Dick and Jane run because after Spot would add too much complexity to the sentence for the minds of those that they are indoctrinating. Point five is, I heard these ISIS guys are in Lebanon too. This region is a mess. This is CNN. CNN. I heard these ISIS guys are in Lebanon, too. This region is a mess. Good grief. I mean, yeah. You know, there's the redneck comedy tour, and that one of the lines is speaking of when somebody does something stupid, here's your sign. It's like a post-it note that is placed on your head that says, oh boy, am I stupid? Well, either those who have received degrees from America's leading journalistic schools in English, or the audience of those listening and reading CNN are stupid. Perhaps both. I heard these ISIS guys are in Lebanon too. This region is a mess. Now, mind you, that ISIS explains exactly what they're attempting to do. It is the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And they have a manifesto that says that their goal is to establish an Islamic state, not only there, but one to rule over the entire world. Now, are these guys in Lebanon? Well, ISIS is a group of fundamentalist, Sunni, Muslim terrorists. Do you think there's some Sunni Muslims in Lebanon? Do you think there's some Muslims in Lebanon? Now, Lebanon today is controlled principally by Hezbollah. Hezbollah means Allah's party. Hezbollah is the largest Shiite terrorist organization in the world. Hezbollah is essentially the Marine Corps of Iran. It's their most elite forward unit. And Hezbollah, which has been headquartered in Damascus, Syria, has spread its influence into Lebanon. And in Lebanon, the first thing that Hezbollah did is they murdered the Christian prime minister. Then they began to terrorize the Lebanese people. They began to launch raids against Israel from southern Lebanon. They have turned a country that was recovering into a war zone. Now, with the invasion of Iraq, now that the lid has been off of this conflict between Sunni and Shia, because Hezbollah was fighting the non-Muslims in Lebanon, now that America has instigated once again this ongoing war between Sunni and Shia, now you do have Sunni and Shia warring against each other in Lebanon. It's spillover. The fact is that the Muslims in Lebanon of the Sunni persuasion want the same thing as do the Sunnis who are fighting in Iraq and the Sunnis who are fighting Shias in Syria. They want to destroy the infidels, which they consider to be Shia Muslims, so that they can conquer the world. And the very designation Sunni ought to tell the story. Sunni is based upon the Islamic word Sunnah. The Sunnah is the example of Muhammad. That example is presented in only one place, the Hadith. Their very name, and they represent 85% of Muslims, is based upon Sunnah, which is the example of Muhammad, Muhammad's words and deeds. Muhammad's words and deeds are presented in the Hadith. And in the Hadith, Muhammad is depicted as a ruthless terrorist, as a warmonger, as a mass murderer. Morally, he's presented as a pedophile, as incestuous, and as a rapist. He is presented as a slave trader and a kidnapper. It would be hard to find a more repulsive individual than how the Hadith presents Muhammad. And that is all that is known about Muhammad. 100% of what is known about Muhammad is contained in the four Hadith collections that were compiled within 200 years of his death. Ishaq Sirah, Tabari's Tariq History, the Sirah's biography, and the topical collections by Bukhari and Muslim. The Sunni Muslims have named themselves after the example that Muhammad set. Muhammad was a terrorist. He inspired and led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. His terrorists were rapists, as was he. They were plunderers, as was he. They were kidnappers, as was he. They were slave traders, as was he. They were ruthless mass murderers, as was he. The Sunnis are following Muhammad's example. That is why they're called Sunnis, from Sunnah, meaning the example, the words and deeds of Muhammad, the most repulsive man who ever lived. Yes, indeed. These guys are in Lebanon, too. They're also in America. They live in Australia. They live in Europe. They live in Scandinavia. And, of course, they dominate the Islamic Middle East. And that is why this region is a mess. We'll be back in a moment. En route, I've heard these ISIS guys are in Lebanon, too. This region is a mess. Yep, fundamentalist Muslims. They're around the world. That's why the world is a mess. Now, they're not entirely to blame. Now, they are entirely to blame for terrorism. 99.9% of terrorist acts are perpetrated by these guys, fundamentalist Muslims. This article goes on to say, and it's very near the end of the article, it says, weak governments in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon have helped al-Qaeda gain strength, and now Kerry calls ISIS the most dangerous player in the region. Well, it's not true. Al-Qaeda doesn't have any strength anymore. In fact, Al-Qaeda has one person. Of the original Al-Qaeda, there's one person. Ayman al-Zawahiri. He was he's an Egyptian that joined the Great Jihad in Afghanistan during the time that America was the principal benefactor of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. That was before we were warring with them. We were arming them. And Ayman al-Zawahiri was a very effective leader of Islamic Jihad, which was his terrorist group, in Egypt, where he orchestrated the mass murder of innocent tourists. That was his prime target. And he was then very close to being hunted down and killed by the Egyptian military, which was in charge of Egypt at the time, because you can't kill tourists in Egypt and be well received, even if you do so in the name of Islam. And so he went off to Afghanistan, where he joined Osama bin Laden. And he played a very small role. But with Osama bin Laden dead, even though Osama bin Laden was essentially neutered, so that the last 7 or 8 years of his life he accomplished nothing. No one listened to him. Ayman al-Zawahiri now is the only spokesperson from al-Qaeda. And he is shouting out now as loudly as he can against ISIS, telling ISIS not to do what they're doing. And guess what? They're completely ignoring him, which means that any connection between al-Qaeda and ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, is absurd. They're not influenced by him. They're not guided by him. They're not even listening to him. So long as we continue to blame everything on al-Qaeda, we will continue to lash out at a symptom. It's like fighting a cold with a blanket and then passing that blanket on to the next person, not knowing that you're simply going to give them the same cold. It is stupid. What Kerry said is absolutely ridiculous. Now, is ISIS the most dangerous player in the region? No, they're not. The most dangerous player in that region is Hezbollah. That's the group that ISIS is fighting. And far more dangerous than ISIS in that region is the al-Nusra Front, the Victory Front. They're better armed. There's more of them. And yet the United States is providing the weapons for both ISIS and for the Victory Front, al-Nusra. So if they're the most dangerous player in the region, why are we arming them? And realistically, the single most dangerous player in the region is Iran. It's Iran. And yet, the United States' solution to what's happening in Iraq is to provide more weapons and more training to the Iraqis, which are controlled now by the Iranians. We're aiding and abetting the most dangerous player in the region, which is Iran. We're absolutely upside down in all of this. What Kerry said simply is not true. Al-Qaeda is dead. There will be no resurrection of Al-Qaeda. ISIS is one of a thousand names used by Islamic jihadists. If every ISIS member was killed this afternoon, other jihadists would pick up their weapons and continue the fight. In fact, the world would be less safe because Iran's grip on Iraq would be more all-encompassing should ISIS fail. Rather than being an enemy, why they are savage and why we should not support them, the fact is that ISIS is doing the world a service and that they are weakening Iran's grip on Iraq and making Iran more vulnerable, which is in everyone's best interest. This article from CNN concludes, Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon are all seen by many experts as proxy wars between Shiite Iran and Saudi Arabia, a Sunni nation. A full-blown civil war in Iraq, in addition to Syria, could further increase sectarian tensions and destabilize the region. When Shattering Myths continues, we will follow up on that theme and then consider what Time magazine had to say about this mess. CNN limits the carnage to Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon when the same carnage is pervasive throughout the Middle East. Every place where Sunnis are a majority and Sunnis, Shias are a minority, the Shias are being murdered by the Sunnis. It's to Iraq now, it's the opposite, where the Shias are the majority and they're killing one another. But for most places, other than Iraq and Iran, the Sunnis are the majority, vast majority, and after the killing fields were created by the United States invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, particularly Iraq, you're seeing Sunni on Shia terrorism rise geometrically. It is a proxy war that is taking place in Syria. It's not a proxy war in Iraq. It is not a proxy war in Lebanon. The Syrian civil war is a proxy war. It is being fought with not only Saudi Arabia, but Qatar and other fundamentalist Islamic nations of the Sunni persuasion, including Turkey, on one side, and Iran, Iraq, which is now a unified country representing Shia Islam on the other. And while that is a proxy war that is extraordinarily disturbing as Sunnis and Shias murder one another, the big issue with that war is that there is no end to it. There is no diplomatic solution. There is no military solution. And on the side of the Shiites, you have Russia and China, because of the vast oil and gas reserves in the Caspian Sea, to which both have extensive pipelines. And on the other side, you have the United States and Europe, which are just stupid. They have no reason to support the Sunnis, but yet are doing so. And so this war, which has no end, this war, which is being prodded as a proxy war, has the capacity to lead to World War III, and probably will. It's why when Yahweh discusses America, and it's only one place in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that America is discussed. It's in Yahshua, Isaiah 17 and 18. And the preamble to it passes through Damascus, and the destruction of Damascus is what leads to the fall of America. And indeed, we have sown the seeds of our own destruction in Damascus because of what we did in Iraq. And rather than making America safer, rather than making the world freer, rather than ridding the world of terrorism, we exacerbated every problem. Time magazine wrote an article on the same thing, because the deterioration of what is occurring in Iraq is catastrophic. And so this is what Time reports. The Iraqi government that the U.S. put into power. Now, there's an astute statement. The government in Iraq is the government the United States put into power. Now, what they don't say is that that government is a Shiite government, and that government is controlled entirely by the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani, who's an Iranian Muslim, an Iranian Shia Muslim. The Iraqi government the U.S. put into power during 8 years of war lost the key city of Fallujah over the weekend. And while you weren't paying attention, al-Qaeda returned to western Iraq with a vengeance in the guise of the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Now let's pick this apart. It is true that the United States created a puppet government in Iraq, just like we did in Afghanistan, just like we did in Vietnam. It does not work when you do that. There is no democracy associated with doing such a thing. We fought an eight-year war that we made a bad situation worse. It is true that Fallujah is now a war zone. Now, it's a war zone because the Shiite government, using $25 billion worth of American weaponry, plowed huge swaths of Fallujah down with their tanks, with their Apache helicopters, with artillery, with bulldozers. Using American equipment, they plowed right through Fallujah. Protest camps in Fallujah. And they have done so repeatedly. Even now, Fallujah is besieged with American weapons wielded by Shiites. As for al-Qaeda, no, there is no al-Qaeda. It is the Islamic State of Iraq. That should be sufficient. As for the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant, in the guise of Time magazine, ISIL, Levant is the term that is principally used to speak of the Promised Land. But it is now being used to speak about Syria. And it's al-Sham is the Arabic word. It's the Islamic, which is an Arabic word, state of Iraq, and al-Sham, greater Syria. You know, why not just simply translate the words appropriately? Time magazine, you're capable of it. Obviously, you have somebody at Time that reads Arabic. And it is fundamentalist Sunni Islam that is acting in the guise of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. It isn't Al-Qaeda. Now, the fact is, though, that what Time wrote in their opening paragraph was half true, and that's pretty darn good for Time magazine. Maybe we should cut them a break. They went on to say Sunni insurgents seem largely in control of Iraq's Anbar province. So they've gone from Al-Qaeda to Sunni insurgents. This term insurgents is so improperly used. An insurgent is somebody who rebels against a traditional authority. The fact is that Islam is the authority. And so they're only rebelling against the puppet government that was established by the United States. This is a civil war between Sunnis and Shias. And it's all of Anbar province that they've taken control of, not just the city of Fallujah, where an estimated 1,500 of the nearly 4,500 American troops were killed in Iraq. So one-third of America's blood shed in Iraq died in Anbar province. And so what you're going to hear here is the testimony of some of those who were there. Yes, America lost 1,500 men and women, young boys, typically, fighting for nothing in Anbar province. Fallujah, the province's second largest city, is the latest prize in the long simmering war between the Shiite and Sunni strains of Islam. The conflict has now come to a full boil, 2 years after the last U.S. troops, whose presence kept a lid on the fighting, left Iraq. Well, once again, that's also half true. Pretty good for Time magazine. It was America who removed the lid. You just have to look at what was the conditions in Iraq under Saddam Hussein before America invaded. There was no open bloodshed between Sunnis and Shias. And there was mass killing between the Sunnis in Iraq and the Shias in Iran. They were at war with each other, but even they had fought each other to a standstill, and that war had drawn cold. So before America invaded Iraq, there was no mass killing between Sunnis and Shias in Iraq. America invades the country, and for a moment in time, for 7 years, both Sunnis and Shia direct their attention at Americans and kill 4,500 of them. Americans leave, and America, having armed both sides, they've turned on one another to kill one another, and they're doing so in mass. The one thing that changed from they're not to they are is Americans' invasion. We didn't keep a lid on it. We removed the lid. Time goes on to say, within hours of the city's falls, Americans who fought or covered the pair of bloody 2004 campaigns to keep Fallujah out of Sunni militant hands expressed concern via the Internet over whether their fallen comrades had died in vain. This is, or is this, wondered Philip Carter, an Army veteran of the Iraq War, who also served as a senior civilian role in the Obama Pentagon. Is this what it felt like for Vietnam veterans in 75? You see, in Vietnam, America fought a very similar war. We invaded Vietnam with the idea that we would keep the communists in Vietnam away from those who were allegedly democratic. Now, the problem was, of course, in Vietnam, is that you couldn't tell a communist from a non-communist. They all looked the same. And so we had no idea who we were fighting. We had no idea who we were killing. We bombed villages indiscriminately. We manufactured more enemy than we killed. It was a war that we could have fought for 1,000 years and not prevailed. And so when America left Vietnam, the Vietnamese, the communists, finished their conquest. It had been as if we had not been there, except for the fact that we lost tens of thousands of lives and squandered nearly $1 trillion. That's what happened in Vietnam. It was inevitable. There was no other option. When America made this stupid decision to invade Vietnam based on a series of lies, the handwriting was on the wall. It was a lose-lose war. There was no way to win. You could win every battle, but the war was lost. The same thing was true for Iraq. Now, I'm not saying that from a position of being able to look back on it in history, but said that the moment we invaded, before we invaded, made the comparisons to Vietnam, made them all, every one of them, and every one of them came true. It was easy. The handwriting was on the wall. Iraq was a lose-lose proposition. Not only was there no reason to sacrifice American blood and coin in Iraq, just as was the case in Vietnam once we left, it would be as if we were never there. We made a bad situation worse in both places. Back in a moment. Marine Paul Soldera said, why did they die? Why did the 1,500 Americans that died in Fallujah, why did they die? Well, I can answer the question. They died making a bad situation worse. They died because their government that sent them there was reprehensible. They died because Americans voted for immoral people, put them in positions of power, and they abused their power. They died because America is unwilling to come to grips with what Islam actually is. They died because our educational system has failed, so that most people no longer think and they do not understand. They died because America is bankrupt as a country, morally, financially. They died making a bad situation worse. If you're a parent and your son or daughter wishes to join the military, if they're 18, you really have no ability to stop them, but you can do everything you can to discourage them. I have laid out for this program 315 pages of news stories that I wish to cover. About 26 pages down, we're 5 pages down today, and have spent almost an hour and a half covering the news. Almost 2 hours, actually, now covering the news. Is a story that we are going to cover in detail. We may not get to it to the end of the week, but it's a story of the suicides by returning Afghan and Iraqi vets. The reported number is 22 per day. The actual number is probably 44 per day. And we're going to talk about what that means in terms of the actual number of people who died prosecuting this senseless war. You're not dealing with the 1,500 who died just in Fallujah or the 4,500 American servicemen that died in Iraq. The actual number between Iraq and Afghanistan in battle and as a consequence of the stupidity, the immorality, the foolishness, the ignorance of our political leaders and those who elected them is actually 167,000 dead. They all died, making a bad situation worse. This quote, if you think that Fallujah's fall suddenly means your Iraq service was in vain, then you've been oblivious for 11 years, added Brandon Friedman, who also served there as an Army infantry officer and wrote a book about the experience. He says it was always pointless. Indeed, that is at least completely true. That is an absolute accurate statement. Bravo. If you think that Fallujah's fall suddenly means that your Iraq service was in vain, then you've been oblivious for 11 years, added Brandon Friedman, who also served there as an Army infantry officer and who wrote a book about the experience. It was always pointless. The absolute best that can be said for the sacrifice of 160,000 American lives between those who died in battle, accidents, and from suicide once they returned home because they couldn't live with what they had done, what they were ordered to do, is that it was pointless. That is the best possible spin that can be put on it. There is no way to put propagandist lipstick on this pig. The truth is, America made a very bad situation in Iraq infinitely worse. Rather than defending American liberty, we made America vastly more vulnerable. Rather than bringing an end to terrorism and thwarting terrorism, we expanded it exponentially. Everything we did in Iraq was a disaster. It was far worse than pointless. Veteran Middle East observer Jeffrey Goldberg summed it up this way. Quote, one war from Beirut to Baghdad, end quote, suggesting that the latest battle of Fallujah is simply the latest fight across a wide region of the globe between Sunni and Shiite sects. Therefore, if he's right, and he is, the U.S. armed both sides. The United States pulled off the restraints, allowing them to kill one another with the weapons that they had provided. And hundreds of thousands have died as a result. It's despicable. Under such circumstances, you ought not be patriotic. You ought not vote for anyone who supports such foolishness. We'll be back in a moment.